Blog Talk Radio.
Alongside Jeremy Espy,
and for the next hour, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And of course, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. And if you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. And you can listen at blogtalkradio.com/pecan. That's blogtalkradio.com/pecan. And you can send email messages to the show at goforward.gan@gmail.com. That's goforward.gan@gmail.com. Jeremy?
Paulie.
How are you?
It ain't nothing.
But today we're expected to be joined by great offensive lineman, friend to the show, 11-time Pro Bowl offensive tackle, Willie Rofe. Willie will give us a lowdown and give us his thoughts of the week's past action and what's going on around the league. Should be great to get Willie's thoughts, ideas, opinions, and beliefs, and it's always great to have Willie on the show. So we'll be joined by him, and it should be a lot of fun with Willie. Good to be yucking it up with the great Willie Rofe.
Well, there's a lot to talk about. It should be interesting to see, you know, and to get Willie's take on the season so far, especially and going around, taking him around the league. There's a lot to talk about.
A whole lot to talk about, and we're going to start here. As you guys all know, if you've been listening to the show, we got a little bet. And Jeremy, big Kevin Cobb guy, lauded the trade of Donovan McNabb to the Redskins, and a guy who really was important in support of the move, and really big Kevin Cobb guy. You know, I'm the guy. I wrote songs about McNabb. I did the whole bit. I tried to save the man. I actually started a campaign to save McNabb. By the time I started, he was traded. So, I mean, all those things. But, hey, my boy, Donovan McNabb, came back from 10 points against the Super Bowl contending, which many people believe is Super Bowl contending, Green Bay Packers, led him to a victory in overtime, threw for over 300 yards, and was impressive and led his team to victory and give him a lot of credit and give the Redskins a lot of credit, who sit 3-2 and on top of the NFC East, along with the Eagles and the Giants. But Donovan played well, over 300 yards, 357 yards to be exact. I mean, it was a good performance by Donovan, a solid performance by Donovan, and ultimately a winning performance by Donovan. And right now, give Donovan and the Redskins a lot of credit on a 2-game winning streak. And again, like I said before, they are on top of the NFC East.
But Paul, I think at some point we do have to give Kevin Cobb at least some credit. He played well last game, and I think also, you know, when you look at the 49ers in terms of that game, they were a dangerous opponent for a lot of reasons, and Cobb played he had a very efficient game. I mean, it was 16% completion ratio, threw for just above 250, and he had most importantly, no turnovers. And that's what I said. This gets back to
great.
Paul, why wasn't it great? They put up 27 points. The offense
seven of those came from the defense.
But, Paul, they Then he puts up 20 points. His offense puts up 20 points. He throws for 250, a touchdown, and no turnovers. And I mean, and it was 21, I think, 21 for 31. This is a guy coming out of the last time you see him, just above 200, which was really not a very good game. A 63%, I think, just above 60-65% completion ratio, a turnover in terms of an interception. You know, so this was a turnaround game for him. He was very efficient this game.
No, it's a building game. It's a building block game for Kevin Cobb. I'll give him credit on that. No turnovers.
And it was definitively, this was a team.
It was a wounded animal that they played. So I'll give you that. They definitely faced a wounded animal in the San Francisco 49ers.
It's not that I'm not a fan of McNabb, or I'm not a Kevin Cobb fan or supporter yet. My whole point, if you remember the bet, it was I thought that Cobb was projected to have a better year than McNabb because of the weapons around each of the two quarterbacks, and certainly, you know, the fact that I think the Eagles had right now a better team. And I think that Cobb, this is going to be a big week for him. This is a huge week for him right here.
This is a game, and talking about the Atlanta Falcon game, this is a game definitely where you'll be able to tell a few things about Kevin Cobb and playing an Atlanta Falcons team that is playing some great football right now, and they're on top of their division in NFC South. So you give them a lot of credit, but you're right. This is definitely going to be a game that will show some things and show what Kevin Cobb is about to this point, because it's still going to be hard for you to make a full-fledged determination about this guy after only two starts. Well, that would be five starts, excuse me. But it's still going to be hard to make a full-fledged determination about this guy.
Well, here's the game, I think, too, you're going to start to build that portfolio, you know, that decision-making portfolio, because, like you said, I think Atlanta is a good test for this Eagles team, where last week, you know, they play a team that was dangerous and had projected to be a very good team, and they certainly not lived up to that expectation. Now you get a team like, you know, in Atlanta where – this is a bigger game for the Eagles than it certainly is for Atlanta. And it's a bigger game for Kevin Cobb because he's trying to get in the middle of a supposed quarterback controversy.
And if Kevin Cobb plays well again this week, you definitely have a controversy on your hands. Now, and to this point, Andy Reid has not ruled out Mike Vick. He has not ruled him out, and Mike Vick hasn't ruled himself out yet. More than likely, he won't play, but they haven't ruled him out. But you're right. I mean, this is an opportunity for Kevin Cobb to prove some things to a lot of people out here, a lot of people who are questioning whether this guy is a legitimate franchise quarterback. And I think it's a legitimate question. And at this point, I don't think you have a legitimate answer. But I definitely think it's a legitimate question because I'm not too sure this guy is a franchise quarterback. Can he be a decent to average quarterback? I say yes, judging off what you see. But in terms of a franchise quarterback, you still have to ask that question, and that question truly hasn't been answered yet, and I'm not sure it will be answered by this week then, and may not even be answered by the end of the year if Michael Vick comes back as the starting quarterback. So it's definitely a question right now that is going to have to be answered at the end of the year, and we'll definitely talk about that and all things NFL with the great Willie Rofe, who is on the line now, and we'll bring him in right now. We're joined by 11-time Pro Bowl offensive tackle, Willie Rofe. Willie, how are you, sir?
How you doing? I've been listening to y'all talk about Cobb, and it's kind of hard to analyze the situation when the guys, you know, one week he's in, the next week he's out. You know, they had a big victory last week, but it's kind of hard to see how good he can be or if he's a franchise quarterback when you have shuffling guys in and out of the lineup.
Go ahead, Jim.
Well, one of the things, certainly, too, My qualm, I think, certainly, you know, with this, the shuffling of the quarterbacks now, I mean, with Vic getting hurt, now you're going to look at, you know, there's been injuries. They're not a consistent team. Last week they start running the ball, and they had a lot of success. And that was part of, I think, what Cobb was able to finally relax in the pocket and have a little bit of a presence, because they weren't just throwing the ball, which was the predominant his failure, especially in the season opener. And now you're coupled with, well, if he plays well against Atlanta, will this start again, this quarterback controversy? And what's that going to do? Shuffling in quarterbacks in this wildcat offense that Reed wanted to do with McNabb, that was the biggest reason. And, you know, Paul and I, when we were speaking a couple weeks ago, it was, you know, it's pretty obvious. This isn't something Donovan wanted. He didn't want to be a part of it, and that's why he left.
Yeah, you know, it's just a situation. Obviously, when Vic was in there, they stretched the field more. They were able to go down the field more, and the threat of his running ability was another facet that he added to that offense. And, you know, the line played, you know, better. And like you said, it was more of a running game, more of a play-action game when Cobb was in there last week. But, you know, the big play ability still isn't there, and I think that's what they'll be looking at to see if the Atlanta can generate some big plays down the field like they were when Vic was in there. And I think that's gonna, you know, really the big difference right now. Can he stretch the field and go down the field with Cobb and Atlanta?
Now, Willie, with Michael Vick being out, more likely he's going to be out this week. If Vick is healthy, should he be the starter of this Philadelphia Eagles team?
I think if he played the last couple of weeks, you know, I think he should be the starter if he's healthy. I mean, you know, the way the offense started clicking and the plays they made, and you know, I hadn't watched the game from end to end, but I know that those receivers both looked very explosive with him in the lineup, and the threat of him running, getting down the field, which, you know, happened to get him hurt on that one play, is also another factor. But we'll have to see what happens. It's going to be very interesting to see how this year plays out in Philadelphia.
Now, Willie, in terms of Michael Vick's style, he can't play that way. He can't take hits like that if he wants to be a franchise quarterback at this point. Do you think at some point he'll get it and realize that maybe he needs to slide, or is it just a part of who he is and what makes him who he is?
Well, I think it's a part of who he is, but I think on that particular play when he was down by the goal line, he was also, stretching out trying to score a touchdown. So in that situation, I mean, he was trying to score a touchdown, and, you know, he was making the play that he should be sacrificing for the team. You know, I mean, he's going to have to ride a slide more, but he was trying to make a play.
Well, but Willie, and you, I mean, you know this as well as I do. There are other quarterbacks in the league in the same situation, 3 and 4 yards from the goal line, they're sliding. I mean, Tom Brady is sliding there. And the premier quarterbacks in the league are taught, let them run that second down, I mean, or that's first down for the Eagles. He picked up the first down. And Paul even went so far as to say, too, there was a penalty on the play. So that whole play didn't even count, and he broke 2 ribs. At some point, if you want to be a franchise quarterback, not a franchise running back, not a franchise receiver, not a franchise tight end, you have to remember your job. They put that rule in where he can slide and he's, you know, defenseless for a reason.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and like you said, if he slides, if he can slide and learn how to slide and not take those hits in the middle of the field, or, you know, a lot of times people run out of bounds also. But in that circumstance, you know, when he's down there by the goal line, I mean, if he just slides down, I mean, it's going to look like, you know, why didn't he stretch out for the goal line in that circumstance? So I understand why he did what he did, trying to get the team and get the fans excited early in that game and scoring that touchdown. But, you know, I think you're right. He's going to have to know how to slide in different situations during the game, or just run out of bounds and avoid taking those hits the older he gets.
And I think that was just instincts taking over there as well. Like you said, you smell that goal line and you're going to go for it, whether who's there or who's not. I mean, you're going to try to score the touchdown. I think instincts definitely took over there. Well, being a Pro Bowl offensive lineman like yourself, is it a lot easier to have a scrambling quarterback or a pocket passer?
Well, you know, in my case, I played with Aaron Brooks in New Orleans for a little while. He would take off a little bit, but most of the time I had pocket quarterbacks, especially at the end with Trent Green. You know, we had Jim Everett early in my career, and we had to protect him for longer than usual because he couldn't scramble. And with Trent Green at the end of my career, you had to protect those guys, and you knew which protections. You know, when certain plays are called, you got to protect on a play action or seven-step drop, you got to do a better job of making sure you hold your man. So playing with Donovan McNabb in the Pro Bowl, you know, it was exciting just having a guy run around being able to make plays. But, you know, most of the time I had pocket quarterbacks. So it is a little harder to protect those guys and making sure you keep them upright. A scrambling quarterback just gives you more options and, you know, I can scare the defense more when the guy takes off, especially on third and long, and the guy runs for that first down and deflects the defense.
Okay. Now, let's go around the league for a second now. I want to start with Brett Favre and the Vikings. When you look at that team right now, you have a team with Favre who looks like an older quarterback. He's finally acting his age, and he's struggling right now. He got the elbow tendonitis. He says possibly if it keeps bothering him, he'll take a game or two off. And he also has some of that off-the-field issues that he's dealing with. Now, with the addition of Randy Moss, and right now the Vikings are 1-3, can they turn this thing around?
You know, they can turn it around. It's not going to get any easier. It just looks like something's missing with them offensively. Outside of that, Peterson's playing better this year. He's not turning the ball over, so they can't make an excuse. But Brett Favre's got, 10, 11 turnovers? The team's got 11 turnovers, and Brett's got 10 of them. You know, he can't turn the ball over, you know. And any time you throw, you know, once you've been playing for 4 or 5 weeks, and these teams are looking at some of the routes you're running, and then they start jumping these routes, just like when they scored on him and happened to cause the problem last week. You can't turn the ball over in the red zone and give up 7 points right there. And, you know, it kills your team. And they had a team, missed a couple passes, and he fumbled the one ball when it was in his hands, and he dropped the snap. I mean, those three turnovers really hurt them in that game. I mean, if they don't commit those turnovers, we don't know what happens in that game. But, you know, I mean, he's got 10 of the turnovers, of the 11 turnovers. I mean, that's hurting that team a lot.
And as of right now, he does have 7 interceptions. And I believe he only threw 7 the whole last year.
And 3 fumbles.
Right. So, I mean, you couple that with the 3 fumbles, I mean, it looks like Brett Favre is aging right in front of us, right before our eyes.
Willie, one of the questions, I think one of the misnomers in terms of the 3 fumbles, that is definitively a factor, in my opinion, of rust. It's inexcusable for a guy that's been in the league as long as Favre is. I mean, he's not paying attention out there. I mean, he's not remembering that when you're in the pocket and it's collapsing, you have to be conscious of where people are on the field and that defenders are coming at you. He's still, you know, I think there's a part of him that's still not in game mode.
Well, 2 of those fumbles was one was he bung in the center, his hands weren't together, and the ball was trying to head it off to the running back. I mean, it wasn't anybody around.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't understand that. Like you said, I mean, this guy's been in the league 20 years. I mean, either something's wrong with his hand or his grip. But, I mean, I understand the ball's wet. But look on the other side of the ball. What did we talk about week 1? You guys and I talked about how they didn't stretch the field and how Sanchez has to play better. And Sanchez isn't putting up great numbers, but he's not turning the ball over. And some weeks he makes some big plays, like against the Miami Dolphins a couple weeks ago. And then some weeks he's just playing good enough to help the chains move and make some plays, and he's not turning the ball over. And that's what he's doing great right now. He's controlling the clock and not turning the ball over.
That's the difference between the two right now. We look at an offer. Sanchez hasn't thrown a pick this year. And I talked about it. We all talked about it. I mean, his turnovers, he would have to limit his turnovers in order for this team to take it to that Super Bowl level. And right now he's limiting those turnovers. And this team is – the Jets really look very, very good.
And Paul, Willie's the only witness. I mean, he's been with the show, and you know Willie. I said going into the season, I really thought that, you know, Sanchez is getting a bad rap because – and you're seeing the development of a very young player, and you're seeing a guy who I think, again, much like the quarterbacks that had success early in their career, the Roethlisbergers, and I'm telling you, I think he is going to project to be a force in this league. They have weapons around him, and he is using LT to his advantage. He, even in that game on Monday night, he is looking downfield first and dumping the ball off last. He is recognizing that not every throw he has to make has to result into a first down. Let the players dictate, you know, what happens in terms of moving the chains, but make the right read.
Make the right read, get the ball to the right guy, and look guys off. I mean, if you look at that last pass through, the guy's sitting there reading him the whole time. You got to look guys
right.
off and then make the right reach. Let your players make plays. Now, as the Jets evolve, you're going to have to learn how to use, you know, all these weapons. You got Holmes back. You got Braylon back. Holmes will probably do more of the underneath work. And the good thing the Jets are doing right now, they're using both of those backs very well. You got LT who's going to slash, and you got the other back coming in that's going to hit it. I mean, the Jets just have the coordinator's going to have a great time just designing plays to keep everybody happy and keep all those guys involved.
Well, do you think it's some of the off-the-field issues are plaguing Brett Favre right now? Do you think it's affecting his game a little bit?
I think it did. I think some of the when you talk about off-the-field issues dealing with your family, and you're talking about this your last year playing, you know, and then you've got 10 turnovers. I mean, you know, as great as Brett has been and as great as he's been for the league and all the records he's accomplished, you don't want to – I will hope he can turn this year around because – I don't want to see him go out on a bad note. I don't want to see a player of his magnitude go out on a note like this, and then with the turmoil, you know, they're talking about with the girl and with the all out stuff. You know, he doesn't want to end his career like that. And what are people going to remember? They're going to remember the records, but they're going to also remember if he has a bad year. He had a bad year, and he had this issue going on with this girl. That's what they're going to remember.
I have to ask this because, and Paul knows, my big mouth forces me, you know, to say what people are thinking. And you're unique because you're walking into the Hall of Fame. You know, it's only a matter of time. You've been around, and you're a Hall of Fame offensive lineman in the NFL. Why do they do this? Why is there, you know, the mindset? Forgetting if he did or he didn't, it's just in even like using Ben Roethlisberger. What makes them not recognize who they are in terms of the fact that no matter who they meet, they should be more conscious of what's going to happen down the line than what's going to happen tonight?
Well, obviously, two factors. First of all, it's kind of ironic that it does come out the week they play the Jets. I mean, why has the story been going on 2 years and then it comes out when they play the Jets, the week they play the Jets on Monday night? That looks a little weird to me. Like, maybe that was set up. Another thing, these guys think that they probably been getting away with stuff. I mean, I just play ball. We get away with some extra stuff. And they've been getting away with stuff for years that they were doing, maybe in other towns are doing stuff. And they think they can go and keep doing it in other places. Well, it doesn't always work like that. So, you know, because the athletes and guys are trained to go out there and perform, and I'm going to go out here and lay it on line with the field, and I'm making a lot of money, they feel like they can get away with stuff, and that's what happens. But in this day and age, it's not 1995 anymore, or 2000, 19, you know, in the 90s, when stuff like that wasn't reported. Everything now is these people are taking these conversations, are saving these pictures, are saving these text messages, you know, like they did Tiger, and they save it and bring this stuff out on these guys a year or two later. I don't understand why it's coming out 2 years later, the week they play the Jets. To me, it seems like it was kind of a setup too, right? Do you think that it was kind of like...
Oh, no,
it's kind of suspicious. I mean, why does it take 2 years for this whole thing to come out?
I'll tell you, Willie, I have a big problem, even with Tiger. Paul, we've been talking about Tiger since it came out. One of the biggest problems I have in this country is the it's so ridiculously overhyped in terms of, you know, Brett Favre is a grown man. I mean, and this has nothing to do with his play. This is, it's not, they're now bringing morality in terms of, it's almost like sports are allowed to, if you're a player or if you're an athlete and you play any sport, because of these moral clauses and how they've been able to, I really don't know how the players have allowed this. You know, in any other profession, I mean, if you go out and then you have a drink and you do something stupid, I mean, if your employer finds out about it, they don't have to do what the NFL does, which is they make a mockery of all this. The players are held to a ridiculous level of accountability when really there was nothing wrong. And like you said, this happened 2 years ago, and for the NFL to be conducting a review of it, the NFL should be conducting a review of itself because they dropped the ball. This happened 2 years ago, and here you have a woman basically using this as a weapon. And so if anything, there needs to be more policies in terms of the player and the third-party relationships with vendors in the NFL. Because if anything, Brett Favre was the target here. He is being extorted. And the NFL is, in my opinion, partnering with the extortionists. Investigating him 2 years later is, in my opinion,
And guess what? If Brett Favre comes up with the right number to pay that girl or whoever, all this stuff will disappear. And like you said, that's what it's all about. Now, you haven't seen the text message. I heard a voicemail, but you haven't seen any pictures or you haven't seen anything. Guess why? Because if Brett Favre pays the right amount of money, all this stuff will just go away. But it still is out there in the media. It still messes his reputation. And then Brett Favre still got a wife at home. And a family back in Mississippi or wherever they are that he's got to take care of. And after this year, if he's done, he's got to spend the rest of his life if it hasn't damaged his marriage to that point where his wife is worried about it. You see, whether something happened or not, it's still speculation. You see my point? So it's not a good situation for him.
Go ahead.
But I think we also have to remember Brett Favre is not the good old boy that everybody would like you to believe. I mean, he's had issues early in his career with this type of thing. So this is not really a surprise. I mean, it's not really a shock at all whatsoever. So, I mean, obviously people are going to make a big deal out of it because it is Brett Favre. But at the end of the day, when you look at it, we shouldn't all be shocked by this, obviously.
Well, we shouldn't be shocked, but if you would think at, you know, at 39, 40 years old, what you did at 23, 24 years old and what you're doing at 40 are a little different situation. You know, after you've been going your situations with your significant other, you have to grow up and learn from your experiences. But like you said, regardless, like you made a great point, regardless of what happened, it's not for us to judge. And like you said, it coming out 2 years later tells me that really what is there. If it was something there, why wouldn't it have come out 2 years ago if it was that bad? You know, why would it come out the week they play against the Jets? And that's the problem I have with it. That it looks like extortion or whatever, and it looks like that organization or whoever wanted to save this for when they played them on Monday night. To me, that's what it looks like.
Well, and that's what I say. I'm getting to a point where I look at, to a certain degree, the leagues now and how they're trying to hold, you know, players to high levels of accountability, which may be appropriate, but at some point, they really do need to take a look at, you know, when there is these types of situation where this is 2 years ago. How long is the NFL going to allow people to, you know, and I use the word extortion because, like you said, it comes out on Monday night. They're playing the Jets on Monday night. It's against someone relatable to the Jet organization. And it happened so long ago, it's meaningless in terms of his morality, because even if it happened 2 years ago, Brett Favre could easily come out and say, you know what happened 2 years ago, I'm a changed man. Look at what Ben Roethlisberger's doing. He's on every news station, every morning show, telling people that he's changed, and he's changed in under 6 months. So I have a problem with how, you know, the league goes about wanting to create this image, and if you look at with Roethlisberger, it's almost a joke because you can be a changed man, but let's let time be the judge of how much you've changed. because you only had two incidents in 2 years.
And I agree.
Yeah, you make a great point. I mean, your life is going to determine, you know, but see, the thing is, like I've seen players, the team protects players with some of these DUIs and some of these circumstances, guys don't even get in trouble for them. The teams protect them. But see, when you get off and you're not in the NFL anymore, then you're not protected. Then you're doing it on your own then. Then you don't have the team to back you up and the situation with that. You know, nothing against the juice, but the juice. I mean, everybody, you know, OJ's infamous with some of the stuff that some of these guys used to do and get away with, but nobody they let them get away with it while they were playing pro ball and doing stuff like that. But when you get out of the league and you get away from football for a period of time, and then you don't have that backing you or that network around you that's taking care of you and babying you to a certain point, then these guys are accountable for their own actions. So, you know, a lot of that becomes with maturity and growing up, and then being out the NFL, then when something happens to some of these guys, as we've seen guys situations, then it looks even more magnified because it looks like, well, they were covering up for them, letting these guys get away with certain things when they played pro sports. And now they're out of pro sports, and now they have to be accountable for their own actions when you should have made them accountable when they were playing pro sports.
Which I think I agree with you, Willie. I definitely think that the leagues are on the right track with, and on the most current turn, you know, with Braylon Edwards, because here's a guy who has tremendous ability, which obviously it does seem like he may need a transplant, you know, a brain transplant, because if especially you are on a team with an organization that has the forethought to basically let you go out any night of the week and have a driver available for you when you're out, and you don't take advantage of that, somebody needs to see what's wrong mentally with you, because it's obviously going to not project well for you down the line. If you're not smart enough to do it when someone's giving it to you, what are you going to do, like you said, when you're not having all these things thrown at you?
Well, when the team is paying for it. When you got two other teammates with you that should be giving you some guidance also, that shouldn't be letting you drive. You know, you got two other teammates with you. You got four individuals in the car, okay? And the crazy thing about it all is you're on a contract year. On a contract year, the last thing you need to do is to put yourself in a situation. Look at Cromartie. Cromartie's playing excellent football this year, and he knows he's on a contract year. You don't screw up on a contract year because any team that looks at you, general managers, or with your team, everything you do, when it comes to negotiations, they're going to hold that against you, or they're going to hold it over your head for a reason why they don't want to pay you some money. And even the coach said, you know, he cost himself millions of dollars. He's costing himself money when he gets in trouble.
When you're in the locker room, Willie, when you were in the locker room and these guys were there, see, I wonder, what was it like in terms of with you where, was it this, I mean, I know we always heard, the DUI was always there, the speeding was always there. The stuff that's happening now, though, like with a guy like Roethlisberger, and the contract year stuff, the only guy I really remember was Rizin, how he just seemed to not get, like, how many second chances he got. But it does seem to be more prevalent than ever that the younger athlete is just they're so not aware of the financial implications and the fact that this is their life. You know, football is his life, and he cost himself easy $10 million here.
To mean and guarantee money. I mean, like you said, it's his life. It's a livelihood. You got a chance to set your family up, your kids, your grandkids up, and you got to maximize it as well as you can. Because what if Brandon Edwards, even this year, what if a guy goes out there and there's a serious injury and doesn't bounce back from him? And we're not even talking about this. So, you know, you got to maximize and get as much guaranteed money as you can. So at the end of the day, if something does happen to you after you get that contract, look at the guy from the young guy from Denver that just signed a big deal and got hurt. You know, it was a pecker or whatever, tricep or whatever it was. But, I mean, he signed a big deal before he got hurt. So, you know, he still got that guaranteed income. So in my situation, what I was thinking is I'm not going to do anything to risk, you know, your money while you're playing ball, you know, especially in a year after, like you said, after you have these adversities and you got a chance to get all these second chances over and over again, there's only so many chances they're going to give you you know, in this league, and you know, you're a top-10 pick, so you're supposed to be making a certain amount of money for your production, and we'll see what happens, you know, after this year.
And you're alluding to Elvis Dumervil, the defensive end for the Broncos, who got paid just before he got injured, and like you said, he cashed in before things went bad for him. Also, Willie, we want to go look at the Dallas Cowboys now, another struggling team, and they actually played the Vikings this week. Many believe and felt at the start of the season that this was one of the more talented teams in the league. Right now, they're 1-3. Who do you blame for this start?
You know, I just don't, if you two have been watching a little more of the games, I mean, is it just that they're not playing consistently week in, week out? I know this, they're giving up a lot of points. I mean, I don't think, if you look at Tony Romo's numbers, his numbers, you know, are bad. You know, I don't think Romo's even bad. I don't know if they're not running the ball consistently enough, but, you know, they're giving up big plays on the defense. I know that, and they're giving up a lot of points. I mean, you score 27 points at home, you're supposed to win a football game. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
I don't know if it's the offense some of the weeks and the defense isn't playing good, but it seems like the team isn't clicking together on all cylinders, but, I mean, they played great against Houston the other week, then they come back at home and lay an egg, but you give up 35 points at home. That's too many points.
But, you know, I think the defense is a problem, and I said this to Paul. I think this team certainly does miss Dio more than they're willing to believe. The running game is suffering. Roy Williams is not the answer. I mean, he might be having a good year for him, but he's not projecting and will never project to mean to this team what T.O. did.
Well, I don't think that. I think they replaced T.O. with Miles Austin and Roy Williams and Des Bryant, but I don't think that's the problem here. I just don't think they're as good or as talented as everybody believes that they are, and it is showing week in and week out. And everybody talks about how talented this team is, but at the end of the day, it has to show in the field, and it's not showing.
It didn't carry over on the field, and like you said, they're not playing consistent. And, you know, maybe it's a team that read their press clipping before the year started. And like you said, it's like with the New Orleans Saints right now. Just because you walk out on the football field and lay your hat out there, this is the NFL. Teams aren't going to roll over. And you saw they had a rookie quarterback undrafted go out there, and he didn't play particularly well. But, I mean, like you said, turnovers are hurting the Saints, and Breeze is still in the top in the league at passing. But another thing, guys, and I think this league is turning into a pass-happy league, and they depend on these little short routes to keep the running game. And I think with the Saints is they are throwing the screen plays like they were with Reggie Bush in there and Pierre Thomas. They missed those guys. But I think this league is turning into a pass-happy league, and they use these short passes to make up for the running game. You got to have when John Elway was at his best, was when he had Terrell Davis, and they were able to run the football consistently and do the play action and control the clock late in the games and in the football games. And you got to have a substantial amount of a running game in this league. I mean, I believe in that. But these teams, it's a pass-happy league now.
Well, it's also because that's the biggest part of the inconsistencies. And I couldn't – every year it seems like the team where the quarterback – Drew Brees is a great quarterback, and there's no denying that. But there's a team, too, that this year, and Paul and I, we were certainly wanting to get your take on what's going wrong with the Saints. And if you look at it, it's clearly they have not run the ball the level they did last year.
And part of that's because of the injuries, too, now. Part of that's because Pierre Thomas and Reggie Bush are out. I think the injuries have really hurt them, and I think that, you know, and they were the best team at throwing that screen pass last year, too. I mean, they threw different screen passes all over the field, and they were hoping to open up and score a lot of touchdowns like that. And the takeaways have hurt. They were taking the ball away defensively a lot, too, last year. So I think it's a combination, but like you said, I mean, you've got to find a way to be able to run the football and take the pressure off Drew Brees. Cause it's like he's got to do everything, you know, every week for that team now. Right now he's got a hurt knee or whatever. I mean he can't carry the load by himself.
And when you look at it, like you said, with the turnovers, I mean, they essentially gave that game away. I mean, Arizona had two defensive touchdowns. So, I mean, when you give up two defensive touchdowns, I mean, you're not going to win many games, and ultimately it cost the Saints. Well, do you also think maybe it's a byproduct of them not stepping up to the level? Because at this point, being a Super Bowl champions, everybody's going to give you their best effort.
Everybody's going to give you their best effort, and everybody's coming at them, even the 49ers game. I mean, the 49ers don't turn the ball over. They could have easily, and that could have been a different outcome. But anytime a team scores 30 points and don't have a rushing or a passing touchdown, I think Levi Jones fell on the ball in his own. They scored another one of those touchdowns. But, I mean, they're going to get everybody's best shot. But I don't care if they get their best shots from an Arizona Cardinal team. They're starting a rookie free agent quarterback. I mean, if the Saints go in there and don't turn the ball up and play their ball game, I think it's a totally different outcome in that game. But I think right now the teams are not intimidated by them because of the way they've seen some of these games go out. And they barely beat Carolina, who's a struggling team at home the week before, but have to kick a field goal to beat them. I mean, they're not scoring points like they did last year. I mean, what, they have 20 points this year? And last year was 30 or 32. I mean, they're not putting up the big numbers like they were last year because of so many injuries, and these teams are not intimidated by them.
And I also think, like you alluded to, missing Reggie Bush and Pierre Thomas, that, I mean, those are big losses, and those were two key guys that helped lead them on that Super Bowl run last year. So it's going to be hard to replace those guys, and ultimately it's affecting how they play on the field. Also, William, another team that is struggling along is the Cincinnati Bengals, and they just came off two bad losses. They lost to the Browns the week before, and this week they lost to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at home. If you look at them, I got to point at Carson Palmer. I mean, he threw three picks last week, and he has six on the season. And one of those picks are actually returned for a touchdown. Another one set up the game-winning field goal. What's wrong with the Bengals other than Carson Palmer pretty much?
I went to that game earlier this year, and if you look at the stats, I mean, he's got seven touchdowns, six picks, 59 completion rate. He's only throwing the ball to 6.6 yards per completion, so that means he's not touching the field. But he does have 1,287 yards. He's in the top 10 in passing yards this year. Well, the problem is, like you said, I mean, he's throwing picks, in bad situations for the team. And I went to the game when they played against Baltimore, and he's just not accurate. I don't know if it's his arm or what's going on with him, but Carson Palmer's the leader of that team. I mean, he had Ocho Cinco wide open a couple of times in the end zone, a couple of routes, and he just overthrew him. I mean, if he doesn't miss some of those throws, I mean, this guy can have 50, 69 yards passing right now, but he's just not accurate. And like you said, I mean, the same thing they have with Brett Favre. He threw that one route in the corner, jumped in front of it, and just took it to the house. I mean, they're not going to let you throw these same routes every week. You got to change it up. I mean, these defenses study, and these quarterbacks are looking at it, and he jumped the route when he scored on it, and you throw the one to pick for him to score the field goal. I mean, he's hurting the team. I mean, and he knows.
Well, but Willie,
he thought he took blame this week.
One of the questions that you just said it a minute ago in terms of a rushing attack, and you look at a Cincinnati Bengals team who, and he's having a pretty good year this year in Cedric Benson, but in comparison to last year when they didn't have T.O., but they did have a lot more success, that's, to me, the one failure in this offense is they're not running first. Everybody is walking into the game knowing they have to shut down T.O. and Ocho Cinco, and if they would run the ball more in times when they should be running the ball instead of passing the ball, you're going to make defenses, and you know this, they have to be more conscious of the run. Cedric Benson is getting his yards. He's had he's having a fair year, but he's not getting the carries to have a great year.
And you make a great point, and I thought about that yesterday, that Cedric Benson was a key factor in that team last year, and they were running the ball a lot more to set up the play action. And like you said, I mean, if I'm the coordinator and I see that my quarterback's having problems, then I'm going to put it in Cedric Benson's hand more and let him run the ball more and take some of the pressure off Carson Palmer. And I think that's the great thing they're doing with the Jets. I mean, they're putting it in the running back's hands letting the quarterback make plays when he needs to, but he's not putting up great numbers. But if I got a struggling quarterback, then I got to come up with other ways, especially if I got Cedric Benson in that offensive line. I mean, Andre, Smith's got to get out there and play and want to play, and he's a better run blocker than the guy they have in right tackle when he doesn't play. But like you said, they got to be able to run the ball more and do the screen plays more. It takes some of the pressure off causing problems, because if you rely on him to do too much, he's not doing it this year. And then everybody can see it now.
And is it safe to say maybe Carson Palmer's on the other side of his career at this point?
Or he just had recovered from the injuries. I mean, he's not that old. He's on the other side of his career, or he's just not recovered.
But therefore, I think when you look at, again, when you look at Palmer and you look at what's happening, what's wrong with this team, this is a team last year where they were running the ball more. And here was a guy without a TO who was having more success because he didn't have – they are predicting – the defenses are predictively knowing that, yeah, they're passing. And certainly I think he's not making the best reads, but if he is not dumping, he's another quarterback who isn't dumping the ball, using the tight end more, using the running backs more. He's still trying to force the 40-yard plays down the field, or he's holding the ball too long, or he should just get rid of it.
Yeah, he was holding the ball too long when we saw him, and like you said, he wouldn't get rid of the ball and just throw the ball out of bounds. Don't take the sack, just get rid of the ball. If nobody's open down the field, just get rid of the ball. And like you said, he's also making just bad throws. I mean, you know, he made four or five throws in that game when guys were wide open that he just shouldn't have made, you know. I mean, he had channels, the whole chick wide open in the end zone, and like you said, T.O.'s getting most of the throws now. You know, I mean, it's really gone from old Chad Johnson to T.O.'s team, you know, as far as the receiver, number one receiver. But like you said, I mean, you got to be able to run the ball. You got to be able to have the screen play and go to the tight end down in the middle of the side. And they drafted that kid out of Oklahoma that's supposed to be so good, Grissom. So, you know, he's got to make some plays.
I'm somewhat critical of Dawson, the coordinator. I will be lining up T.O. and Ocho Cinco on the same side, underneath of each other, and running more creative routes. T.O. is best served when he was in the West Coast offense. Those underneath routes, because of his size and because of his speed, they should be, you know, I think, making defenses attack two players at the same time on the same side of the field. Keeping them at bookend positions in a way, you know, they can just play cover twos, and that's really what you're seeing.
Mm-hmm. But I think also we also have to realize that to this point, Cedric Benson has over 100 carries, and he ended up with 300 carries last year. I think he's getting his carries. I just don't think Carson Palmer is making the plays. And just like we talked about Favre is a guy who's turned the ball over a lot. Just like we talked about Sanchez, a guy who has not turned the ball over a lot. You have Carson Palmer, who is costing his team with these turnovers, and he had two big ones last week against the Buccaneers, and essentially it cost him the game.
In key situations, too. Like you said, you can't turn a pick six, it just deflates the team. I mean, like you said, deflates the team, and then you go up and throw it, and then they kick the field goal. I mean, like you said, and then when you do that, and when you start having those turnovers every consistently week in, week out, and then you get in those games and those key situations, and you do it, and then they say, here we go again. And then, you know, like you said, it just takes the momentum out of your football team.
Right. We're talking to Willie Rove, 11-time Pro Bowler, more than likely future Hall of Famer. Now, Willie, the other side of the Randy Moss trade was the New England Patriots, and they traded Randy Moss to the Minnesota Vikings. And, you know, Bill Belichick, for the most part, has known, like Andy Reid, has known when to get rid of guys, and is very knows his team and is very big on team chemistry. When you look at the Randy Moss trade, was it more about team chemistry than just talent?
I don't know. I mean, I don't see Randy Moss being that much of a distraction this year. He was still going out and playing. Now, They only threw the ball to him one, what, they threw it to him one time on the Monday night game the week before. I don't see how you're
right.
trying to say you're trying to prepare to win a Super Bowl team. You trade your deep threat bomb that has caught 50 touchdowns for you in 52 games. I don't know how you make that trade after week three or four. You know what I mean? If they felt like it was that much team chemistry, or if they didn't think he was going to play hard because it's a contract year, you know, he wasn't playing hard enough. But I don't see how, if you're talking about going to the Super Bowl, how you trade Randy Miles, then you trade for Deion Branch, who, you know, hadn't done anything since he left the Patriots on that Super Bowl run. I don't agree with the trade, is what I'm trying to tell you. I'm not going to trade Randy Moss. You know, I understand if you want the franchise tag taken off of him, then you're not going to guarantee that you're not going to franchise him after this year. But trading a guy that can spread the field like he can, I don't understand how you trade him in week four of the season.
And that just leads me to believe that maybe there is something more to it. Because like you said, I agree with you. I mean, you don't trade a guy like Randy Moss when you're a team that believes that you're a Super Bowl contender and believe that ultimately that you can make it to the Super Bowl. So I agree with you. So it just sounds like to me that there has to be something more to this. There has to be. I mean, if you look at it right now, the Patriots are 3-1. Half a game behind the Jets in the AFC East, and so they're right there. So I'm just thinking it has to be more to it.
Well, the way it never timed out, you know, Belichick and them are never going to say anything. But I mean, like you said, if I got a 3-1 franchise and I got Randy Moss, you know, you said, I mean, the guy,
right.
like you said, the guy's caught 50 touchdowns in 52 games, and then how do you trade him? I don't know. You're talking about going to the Super Bowl. This guy is a guy in the Super Bowl on the playoffs that can make those big plays for you. If he doesn't catch the ball, you know, he can at least get a penalty flag. I mean, I heard the guy was doing great at training camp. I mean, did he think he's lost a step? I mean, I don't understand how you train this guy because things have been misconducted to the organization for 3 years.
Right. Well, I mean, I'll tell you, I think clearly this is it's a very egotistical team. They had no problems the year before making the same type of trade, and their defense has suffered. You know, they traded away Seymour, and their defensive line, their defense has suffered from that trade. I think I look at it as it's very clear. I think when you hear Belichick and Brady, to me, there's no reading between the lines. They did not. I think it was an organizational move that probably they didn't necessarily agree with, but hey, Brady got his money, so he's a company man, and Belichick's well paid, so he might as well fall in line. It's an organization that clearly made a business decision not to pay him, and I think smart enough to get something for nothing, because at the end of the year, everyone was parting ways. The only flaw I have here is if the Pats weren't going to sign him long term in the offseason, they were getting way more than what they got for him. This was a panic button trade, and you know, had they shopped him around all offseason and even into training camp, they probably could have gotten away with a late first, early second rounder for a guy like Moss, who then they could have reworked a deal during training camp. Now you have teams that were scrambling to make a move, and where he winds up in Minnesota, it was very clear this was they rented a player.
But I would think Tom Brady has to be on board with this particular trade, and he has to fall in line with this trade.
Not at all.
Otherwise,
not
I don't think it would happen.
Not at all.
And he would have to be on board for this to happen.
He's the best player on that team.
He is the best player on that team, and if Tom Brady wanted Randy Moss there, I think Randy Moss would still be in New England.
So you think Tom Brady has something to do with the trade? You think Tom Brady didn't want him there?
I think Tom Brady, either, you know, Belichick brought it to Brady, and essentially Brady agreed with it, and they both were in line with what happened. Otherwise, I don't think it would have happened. Because like you said, him and Brady definitely had a great chemistry. And definitely, if you're talking about winning the Super Bowl, wanting to win a Super Bowl, Randy Moss needs to be on your roster.
But Paul, he just got his retirement check. You know, there's a level I think sometimes you forget how fast you forget. Three short months ago.
But my point, My point
no,
is,
Paul,
he is the
three
best player.
Months ago, Brady was
he
bought.
Is the franchise. He is the franchise. And
who's
you're
now
not
been
trading,
bought off.
You're not trading Randy Moss unless Tom Brady agrees to it. What do you think, Willie?
I mean, well, I don't know if he's the franchise. They just gave Tom Brady his money. You know, he had to wait to get his money this year, too, when the season started.
Willie,
so.
that's what I'd say. Willie, you need to speak to him maybe off the air and remind him what a business.
No, but Tom Brady,
is.
I'm saying that Tom Brady is the franchise. That's his team. He's the best player on that team. You're not trading Randy Moss unless Tom Brady gives his stamp of approval.
Well, I
mean, that's what
But that organization that Scott Pioli is with the Kansas City Chiefs now you got to know the organization. Now, they have the policy of y'all come in and go to work and then go home. We're not your friends. So I don't know if it is. I think it's Bill Belichick's team. I think Brady is called a lot. I don't know if he's a company man, but I think that Tom Brady's the most important figure on that team, and I would think they would go to Tom Brady if they knew they were going to trade him. But I think Bill Belichick made that move. I don't know if Tom Brady would have answered, so I think that's a dictatorship and Bill Belichick runs that team.
That's a fair point, but I'm just thinking, and I agree with you. I mean, the Patriots have shown in the past that they're willing to move anybody, no matter how popular it is. I mean, look at Lauren Malloy, who they cut before the start of the season, a few seasons back. So I agree with you there, but I'm just thinking the chemistry that Brady and Moss seem to have, you would think that in order for a guy like Randy Moss to be traded, that Tom Brady would have to sign off on it on some level.
On some level, maybe I think, yeah. But like you said, if I think if somebody's in the locker room is going up there telling Belichick that Randy Moss and him aren't on the same page, or Randy Moss, you know, they got a lot of young players on that team, and they think that Randy Moss is going to be a distraction this year, and they're going to be the guy that they want to be, the man in the locker room they want him to be, then I think Belichick pulls the trade anyway.
Right. Well, we definitely thank you for stopping by, sir. Definitely appreciate your thoughts. It was good to have you on, and we definitely got to have you back throughout this NFL season, Willie, and great insight.
Thank you, man. It's always a pleasure, man. I enjoy talking to you guys. And, you know, like you said, it's a very interesting season. You know, we don't have no undefeated teams right now. The NFC is wide open. I think, you know, you can see the teams are going to be – it's going to be tough in the AFC. But, you know, it's still early in the league and in the season, and the NFC is wide open right now. You know, with all the injuries going on with Green Bay, I don't know who's going to – you know, what's going on. With the Saints got to get it together, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Are the Atlanta Falcons the best team in the NFC? Well, we'll see what happens this week when they come to Philly.
And definitely, and I think we'll find out. But as of right now, you're right. NFC is wide open. The AFC, you kind of narrow down. You got the Jets. You have the Ravens. The Steelers are still there. And I guess the Patriots on some level.
Mm-hmm. All right, man. Well, it was great talking to you, man. I look forward to doing it again.
Definitely, Willie. Take care, sir.
All right.
Willie Rofe, 11-time Pro Bowler. Great insight from Willie Rofe. It's a pleasure to have him and a pleasure to talk to him.
Hopefully
about
he'll
football.
Give you
know this stuff, and it was a fun hour.
Certainly, you may need to remember finance and relatable to how easily people's buyout clauses can be met, Paul.
Well, I just think that my point is, and I understand Willie's point's very legitimate. And it's right. I mean, it's true. Like I said, look at the Lauren Malloy situation. Look at Seymour. Look at all those guys. But I'm thinking to myself, if the chemistry that Moss and then Brady have and had, you would think that any trade concerning Randy Moss, Tom Brady would have to sign off on it on some level. And he also had the situation where allegedly CBS Sports reported, Charlie Casserly, that Brady and Moss got into it. And you also had the situation with Moss allegedly with the quarterback's coach, I believe. So you have all these situations. And then you have Moss earlier in the year talking about the contract and everything. You have all these stories, different things coming out. This just leads me to believe that in order for this trade to have happened, Tom Brady had to be on board on some level. And, I mean, that's just the way I feel about it. And you're entitled to your opinion. Willie's entitled to his. But I'm also entitled to mine. And that's just the way I feel about it. We want to thank Willie Rose for stopping by, 11-time Pro Bowler. You're definitely going to hear a lot from Willie on this show throughout the year. And also, you can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/begin. That's blogtalkradio.com/begin, where you can listen to this show and other shows. And you can also follow me on Twitter at GoForItDan. For sure, me, as Mrs. Wildcat.